Today is Tuesday, July 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The European Union paints a bleaker economic outlook.
Our summer forecast shows, first of all, that the road to recovery is still paved with uncertainty.
Plus, North Korea says it doesn't want to talk.
It all comes days after South Korea's leader Moon Jae-in suggested a new summit could happen between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un before the U.S. elections in November.
We'll have those stories and more next. The death toll in the United States from the COVID-19 pandemic rose above 130,000 people Monday, according to data compiled by Johns Hopkins University in the United States. The U.S. leads the world not only in terms of coronavirus deaths, but the total number of confirmed cases with 2.9 million, a quarter of the world's 11.6 million cases. The U.S. reported over 50,000 new daily confirmed cases during the first week of July, with many states posting a record number of single-day new cases. The figures support Monday's declaration by Dr. Anthony Fauci, the United States' top infectious disease expert, that the U.S. is still knee-deep in the first wave of the pandemic, with hospitals fast approaching capacity in a number of states. In Brazil, which trails the U.S. in the number of confirmed coronavirus cases and deaths, Brazil's President Jair Bolsonaro recently announced that he tested positive for the novel coronavirus, and he says he feels good after beginning treatments. Paulo Gentiloni, the European Union's economy commissioner, announced that the bloc's economy will contract more than previously expected because of the coronavirus pandemic, which has caused lockdowns on businesses and public life that are only slowly being eased.
Our summer forecast shows, first of all, that the road to recovery is still paved with uncertainty. In the euro area, GDP is forecast to shrink by 8.7 this year and to increase by 6.1 in 2021.
Journalist Nicolas Pinault is in Paris, France, and I spoke to him via WhatsApp to get the details.
The calculation had worsened, and we see right now, after the containment measures have been lifted gradually in the European Union, that the situation, economically speaking, is complicated, even for large economies such as Germany. And Brussels, one of course of this difficult recovery for some countries. If you take, for example, Italy, which one of the worst states hit by the pandemic, the contraction of the GDP this year will be 11.2%, which is huge, obviously. You have also Spain, almost 11% for the contraction. And if you take, for example, France, 10.6%. So it's a lot, obviously, and even economies such as Germany, which is the most powerful in the EU, you have this recession of 6.3% this year. I think also it's important to mention that these numbers do not factor in the possible failure of the talks between the European Union and the United Kingdom, and it's also something, a huge risk, according to the outlook.
Yeah, speaking of the talks between the EU and Britain, you know, Brexit talks are underway as we speak. So what's the latest with that? Because there has been a lot of concern that they can't rectify the situation and there could be a no deal Brexit ultimately at the end of the year.
And as a matter of fact, on this Tuesday night in London time, the both negotiators, the one from the UK and the European Union, they're going to have dinner. And I guess it's going to be a bitter menu between the two of them, because basically we've been seeing for the past few weeks that no progress has been made in the talks. They started the talk yesterday between David Frost, he's the UK negotiator, and Michel Barnier for the European Union. And basically, they cannot agree almost on anything. So we understand that the deadline to realize the Brexit goes until the end of this year, but they still have the same opposition and they cannot make any deal. It would be on the fisheries, access to the EU trade market. Both blocks, they're still having the same position. And you can have the UK Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, saying that he wants progress. He wants to have a deal for this Brexit. We've been having this conversation, and they've been having this conversation over the past few weeks, and still no position. So the good thing is that they keep talking, and Britain say he has new proposal to improve the talks. But on the ground, everybody worries that we're going to have what we call a hard Brexit with no deal at all, which would mean some borders and some controls at the borders for passengers, for products, for anything going to the UK, but also for anything entering the EU bloc coming from the UK. And that would be the worst scenario possible for the two entities.
Nicolas Pineau is a reporter based in Paris, France. Asian markets were mostly down as investors look ahead for data they hope will support optimism about a global economic rebound. Benchmarks in Tokyo, Hong Kong, and Australia all fell, and U.S. markets were slightly lower in early trading. Hundreds of protesters continue to camp outside New York City Hall, demanding massive budget cuts to the police department. The movement to defund the police was ignited by the death of George Floyd in police custody. Floyd's death has become a flashpoint in a larger debate about policing and race. VOA's Cecilia Mendoza has that story.
Valdemar Santo has joined hundreds of protesters outside New York City Hall, calling for an overhaul and budget cuts to one of the largest police departments in the United States.
A long time ago, a police officer shot two times one of my brothers. And since that time, I don't like them.
The New York City Police Department has an estimated budget of more than $6 billion. Protesters want at least $1 billion of those dollars to be diverted to social services and instead of the police. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
That we will be moving funding from the NYPD to youth initiatives and social services. The details will be worked out in the budget process in the weeks ahead.
Some officers within the force warn if there are too many budget cuts, the city may see an increase in crime, particularly murders, which are already on the rise in New York. But City Councilman Richie Torres from the 15th District in the Bronx tells VOA the goal of defunding police isn't to make people less safe, but to create an environment where the police aren't the only line of defense.
There is a consensus for dramatically reducing the budget of the NYPD. You know, we have to disabuse ourselves of the notion that the police, that calling 911 is the answer to every problem.
The cuts could mean the plan to hire more than 1,100 new police officers will be postponed and school safety officers could be removed.
Even if they do the budget cuts and things are the same, those in power keep it. Nothing is going to change. Things will continue as they are.
If their demands are not met, protesters say they will stay at City Hall and continue their demonstrations. Celia Mendoza, VOA News, New York.
Bail is set at $1.2 million for the man police say drove around parked cars and into protesters on a closed Seattle highway, killing one and seriously injuring another. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
It happened over the July 4th weekend. Police say Dawat Khalid, who is black, drove his Jaguar into a group marching with the Black Lives Matter movement who were protesting racial inequality and police violence. The whole thing caught on video, including by one of the people that was hit. Khalid's lawyer tells the Associated Press the crash was a horrible accident and not intentional. John Henry Brown says there's absolutely nothing political about this case whatsoever and that his client was in tears. Summer Taylor died at the hospital. Diaz Love suffered serious injuries. I'm Julie Walker.
And coming up later...
Actually, I think in a way it is its own worst enemy now because Facebook is brilliant when it comes to targeting. Absolutely brilliant.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A study published in the European Respiratory Journal provides evidence that suggests teens who go to bed late at night and wake later the next morning are likely to suffer with asthma and allergies. It's been known that there's a connection between the body's internal clock and symptoms of asthma. The researchers studied about 1,713 and 14-year-old adolescents from West Bengal, India. They were asked if they experienced symptoms of asthma, such as wheezing or allergic rhinitis, like sneezing or a runny nose. They were also asked questions about their sleep habits, like when they normally went to bed and awoke the next morning. The researchers say they found teens who slept later had three times the chances of having asthma and two times the risk of allergic rhinitis than those who slept earlier. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. North Korea has no intention of sitting down with the United States and urged South Korea to stop meddling. That's according to a senior diplomat, as a U.S. envoy was due to visit Seoul in an effort to renew stalled nuclear talks with Pyongyang. Reuters reporter Ryan Brooks has the details.
Those comments came just as Stephen Biegun, the U.S. Deputy Secretary of State, was on his way to Seoul for talks with South Korean officials. Biegun is set to discuss ways to restart negotiations with the North. But in Pyongyang state media, Kwon Jung-gun, an official for U.S. affairs in North Korea, said the North doesn't feel the need for a new summit. He also accused the South Koreans of, quote, meddling in others' affairs. It all comes days after South Korea's leader Moon Jae-in suggested a new summit could happen between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un before the U.S. elections in November. Trump and Kim met for the first time in 2018 in Singapore, raising hopes for a negotiated end to Pyongyang's nuclear programs. But a second summit, a year later in Vietnam, and negotiations that followed fell apart. The North has recently begun to dial up tension with the South. Last month, it abruptly blew up an office used by both Koreas for liaison meetings with each other, a building just inside the north side of the border. Then the North suddenly suspended previously announced plans for action by its military, plans that it had never specified.
That was Reuters' Ryan Brooks. Iran has confirmed that a damaged building at the underground Natanz nuclear site was a new centrifuge assembly center. The official IRNA news agency quoted the spokesman for Iran's nuclear agency making the announcement on Sunday. The spokesman says work began on the centrifuge assembly center in 2013 and it was inaugurated in 2018. Iranian officials originally had sought to downplay Thursday's fire, saying it struck an under-construction shed. Iran began experimenting with advanced centrifuge models in the wake of the U.S. unilaterally withdrawing from Tehran's nuclear deal with world powers 2 years ago. Iran has long maintained its atomic program is used for peaceful purposes. Foreign students in the United States will have to leave the country if their classes are all taught online this fall semester or transfer to another school with in-person instruction. It was not immediately clear how many student visa holders would be affected by the move, but foreign students are a key source of revenue for many U.S. universities as they often pay full tuition. The U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency said it would not allow holders of student visas to remain in the country if their school was fully online for the fall. Those students must transfer or leave the country, or they potentially face deportation proceedings. Almost 11 million students are taking China's university entrance exam after a delay as the country worked to bring down coronavirus infections. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The grueling two-day university entrance exam can be a key determinant of a student's future in China and was pushed back weeks from its scheduled date. The exam is believed to be the first mass gathering event since the virus outbreak there, and administrators are enforcing strict rules to prevent infections, including proof of wellness, social distancing, and the wearing of masks. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, urged opponents of Beijing's plan to impose national security legislation in the financial hub to stop fighting the effort.
I urge opponents who still use the usual tactics to demonize and smear the legislation work to stop, because by doing this, they're making themselves the enemy of the Hong Kong people.
Lam's Beijing-backed city administration says a law will bring stability and will target a small number of, quote, troublemakers. But critics see it as the most serious threat to the one country, two systems formula aimed at ensuring Hong Kong's freedoms and protecting its role as a financial center. In addition, scores of colorful posters and shelves of books may soon disappear from the June 4th Museum in Hong Kong. The museum is dedicated to documenting the events which took place that day in 1989 when Chinese troops cracked down on pro-democracy protesters in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. Lee Chuk-yan, whose organization manages the museum, says the facility's future is unknown with the national security law in place.
And we do not know whether this June 4th museum, you know, after the passing of a law, will they see it as sort of activities that are subversion. And therefore, I think that best protection for our artifacts and the materials that we have is to digitalize everything first and then put everything online.
Public discussion of Tiananmen is censored in mainland China, where the topic remains taboo. The June 4th Museum is one of only a few places in China where the Tiananmen crackdown is still openly remembered, at least for now. Major internet and social media platforms have suspended processing government requests for user data in Hong Kong, and Reuters' Libby Hogan takes things from here.
Facebook, Google, and Twitter suspended processing government requests for user data in Hong Kong on Monday. The moves come in response to China's establishment of a sweeping new national security law for Hong Kong. And in an illustration of worries about the law, short-form video app TikTok announced it would be pulling out of the Hong Kong market. Facebook, which also owns WhatsApp and Instagram, said in a statement that it was pausing reviews of all of its services, quote, pending further assessment of the national security law. Google and Twitter said they suspended their reviews of data requests from Hong Kong authorities immediately after the law went into effect last week. Although the social network declined to comment, Twitter cited, quote, grave concerns about the law's implications. Google said it would continue reviewing Hong Kong government requests for removing user-generated content from its services, while Facebook did not respond to a request for comment. Tech companies have long operated freely in Hong Kong, where internet access has been unaffected by the firewall imposed in mainland China, which blocks Google, Twitter, and Facebook. Social networks often apply localized restrictions to posts that violate local laws. And in the second half of last year, Facebook restricted nearly 400 such pieces of content in Hong Kong. TikTok, owned by China-based ByteDance, said it would pull out of Hong Kong within days. A source told Reuters that the move was made because it was not clear if Hong Kong would now fall entirely under Beijing's jurisdiction in light of the new law. Asked about the moves by the US tech firms and prospects for media freedom, Hong Kong chief executive Carrie Lam said on Tuesday, quote, the law would not undermine human rights and freedoms. Since the law came into force, some Hong Kongers have started reviewing or deleting social media posts they thought would be too sensitive.
Fear is already spread over Hong Kong about the cyber expression of the freedom here.
On the streets, many Hong Kongers said they're worried about online freedom of expression. But for messaging app Signal, which promises end-to-end encryption, they've seen a surge in sign-ups in Hong Kong.
Libby Hogan reports for Reuters News. Facebook has recently seen its value plunge as hundreds of companies have pulled their advertisements from the platform in protest over what they see as the company's failure to prohibit hate speech and prevent the spread of misinformation on the platform. Earlier today, I spoke with Dominic Mizrandino, the CEO of Inquisitor Media, to better understand how Facebook got to where it currently is and if it can survive.
Actually, I think in a way it is its own worst enemy now, because Facebook is brilliant when it comes to targeting. Absolutely brilliant. That said, it's not being as transparent. So on one hand, you have the ability to target one of your listeners right now who is interested in this political subject and this food type and this hour and this device. But we're not getting that transparency. And especially with the election, people are now more cautious because the other side of that is people have seen this. And other foreign entities could easily do campaigns. There's been times I know people who've done certain campaigns that a matter of transparency wasn't there. It was simply, here's my credit card. They're getting better at it, Facebook, but Facebook is not necessarily reached a comfort level, as you can see with the advertisers, that they feel comfortable where they're spending their money.
With the advertisers leaving Facebook in the numbers that they have, at least temporarily, is this really enough to get Facebook to change its modus operandi?
I think I would certainly notice if I was running Facebook at this moment, and I think any shareholder is noticing, because it is turning into a little bit of a spiral effect at this point. So I think certainly they're noticing. Now, whether they will choose to change, I think, is a question of how much of an effect, how big does it get, and if they're worried about it spiraling.
In terms of how big does it get, Facebook has some pretty deep pockets. So if this were to be a huge devaluation over a short time period, they would be able to ride this out, correct?
Correct. But there is an additional effect, that being the simple PR of it all. Right now, people are concerned on Facebook. And social media does move quickly. TikTok is a great example. There was a competitor in TikTok. TikTok came out of nowhere. And now there's discussions about whether TikTok should even be blocked, being a Chinese-controlled app. So competitors come out so quickly that I could see Facebook being concerned, saying, what do we need to do to readjust to this market quickly? Short-term can have massive long-term effects online.
Speaking of long-term effects, Facebook has been for many years the default social media application for the world. But before that, there was MySpace, Friendster, and many others that have gone the way of the dodo, so to speak.
Exactly.
Could Facebook end up being one of those aforementioned social media apps?
I think, could it? Absolutely. And anyone who doesn't think so doesn't recall history. Now, will it is, of course, a different question. You know, we are a very fickle society when it comes to apps and internet usage. And once we see something we like better, we run to it.
Dominic Mizerandino is the CEO of Inquisitor Media. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Chinese Communist Party has imposed draconian new security legislation on Hong Kong. Under the new legislation, sweeping and vague provisions on secession, subversion, terrorism, and collusion with foreign countries create new crimes with penalties of up to life in prison. This has already had a chilling effect on the pro-democracy movement. Shortly after the law was passed, Hong Kong activist Joshua Wong resigned as Secretary General of pro-democracy group Democisto and left the party. Other members, including Nathan Law and Agnes Chow, have done the same, and the party announced it would disband. Under the new regulation, many of Hong Kong's protests that took place last year would be punishable by law. Nevertheless, protesters took to the streets July 1st, which marked the 23rd anniversary of the city's handover from the United Kingdom to the People's Republic of China. By midday, the Hong Kong City Police reported their first arrest under the new security law, a man holding a banner that simply read, "Hong Kong Independence." This newly imposed security legislation is clearly a betrayal of the people of Hong Kong, as well as a clear disregard of international commitments by the Chinese Communist Party. The CCP, said Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in a written statement, promised 50 years of freedom to the people of Hong Kong under the 1984 Sino-British Joint Declaration, a UN-registered document and the Basic Law, and gave them only 23. The United States is not standing idle while Beijing strips Hong Kong of its economic and political independence and vitality. The U.S. has imposed visa restrictions on CCP officials responsible for undermining Hong Kong's autonomy. In addition, President Donald Trump has determined to eliminate policy exemptions that give Hong Kong different and special treatment, with few exceptions. The United States, said Secretary Pompeo, will continue to stand with the freedom-loving people of Hong Kong and respond to Beijing's attacks on freedom of speech, the press, and assembly, as well as the rule of law, all of which have until now allowed the territory to flourish. Today marks a sad day for Hong Kong and for freedom-loving people across China.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.